Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Jumma Mubarak, welcome. Happy Friday. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from San Francisco, where tonight at 7 o'clock we're going to be doing this. This is going to be a great gig. Norman Solomon and I together. You can get all the information over at green960.com, all the details for that. But anyhow, here we are live in San Francisco, having a great time. And it being Friday, of course, it's Brunch with Bernie. Our second hour, by the way, just a heads up, we're going to have SMU economist and author of Greenspan's Fraud, one of the best books ever been written on economics, Ravi Batra, is going to be with us for the next hour, our favorite economist. But right now, in our first hour, Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent, neither a Democrat nor a Republican. He is the independent from Vermont, the United States Senator, and sanders.senate.gov for his newsletter. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Or welcome to your show. This is your hour. I think this is your hour, and I love it. It seems like, you know, the house is burning down, and what these guys want to do economically, what they want to do is they want to build a movie set in front of it. So, you know, and say, don't pay any attention to that smoke that's going on behind the movie set.
Tom, this, what's going on now, is so huge and so catastrophic that it's almost impossible to describe and frightening to think about. Everything that they have been telling us, these right-wing folks, whether it is Bush or Phil Graham or John McCain and this whole crew of right-wing theorists, turns out to be, of course, nothing at all but a fraud. They told us about how wonderful deregulation was about, and we've got to get government out of the way of business. I mean, we hear this every day. These guys are just trying to make money and improve prosperity in our country and create good jobs. Get government out of the way. That's what we've got to do. An unfettered free trade, man. If we can just trade with China, we're going to create all kinds of jobs, and it's okay. It's really good for America when we throw our workers out on the street and we move to China and we move to Mexico. That's really a good thing. And the best thing of all, I mean, to magically create so much wealth in America is give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1%. That's what we need to do, et cetera, et cetera. And that's been the ideology that these guys have foisted on us, not just in the last 8 years, but certainly before that as well. Well, it turns out to have all been a fraud, except, I mean, we have to acknowledge that in the midst of all of that, it did work. For the wealthiest people in this country. You now have a situation that since Bush has been president, if you can believe this, this is a really astounding number. Since Bush has been president, the wealthiest 400 people in this country, 400, have increased their wealth by $640 billion. How's that?
Wow.
400 people, $640 billion, and they now own $1.5 trillion of wealth. So for those people, these policies, of course, have worked. Their taxes, their tax rates have now gone down, so their effective tax rate for the people at the very top is lower than it is for a cop or a teacher or a nurse. That's the reality of what has gone on. And now, as a result of deregulation and a domino effect, what you're seeing is, as everybody knows, Lehman Brothers is gone, AIG is gone, Bear Stearns is gone. And now, as we speak right now, I'm in Washington, the administration is putting together a proposal. We don't know how much it will be. Some say it may be as high as $1 trillion. A proposal that they're going to bring to Congress next week, and they're going to say, if you don't act very quickly, the world economy is going to melt down. Now, remember, and I'm sure on your very good computer archives. You have records of a few months ago, probably a few weeks ago, George Bush saying, the fundamentals of the economy are strong. The economy is robust. Now, you and I have talked over the years of my frustration of seeing Bush's people, whether it's the OMB director, Jim Nussle, coming before my budget committee and telling us how strong the economy is, how robust the economy is, how the fundamentals are so good. And they lied and they lied and they lied and they lied. And now finally, 6 weeks before the election, they're going to do everything they can to prop it up to protect John McCain.
Yeah, that's the bottom line, in my opinion, too. And what's so amazing, also, you know, the problem that Barack Obama has is that Lawrence Summers and who's the other guy?
Bob Rubin.
But Robert Rubin, his two of his top four advisors were the guys who were cheerleaders for doing away with Glass-Steagall.
That's
and
right.
For, and for unregulated
trade. You know, I don't usually do this, Tom, but I was on the floor of the Senate just the other day reading a statement that I made in 1999 in voting against this Graham-Leach-Bliley bill, which ended Glass-Steagall and broke down the firewalls. And I read the statement, and it was almost sad in how prescient it was. I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but I think people in 1999 understood, and you're right, that was during the Clinton administration,
yeah,
understood that this was a road to disaster. So what we have to do right now, let me just very briefly tell you what I'm trying to do and working with other senators on this, is first of all, to the degree that a bailout may be necessary, I don't want the middle class and working families to pay for it. Under Bush's disastrous policies, the very wealthiest people have made out like bandits. They have benefited from Bush's policies, and you know what? They're the ones who should pay for the bailout. That's number one. Number two, I think it is clear that Bush's right-wing ideology, economic ideology, has failed. We need to get into re-regulation again. Thirdly, what is amazing, Tom, is right now you're seeing, among other things, the Bank of America picking up Countrywide. I think it was Merrill Lynch as well. Well, guess what's going to happen 10 years from now when you have a bank of that size? They're going to be too big to fail as well. So I think we got to take a hard look at these large corporations that are too big to fail, and we have to understand that if a company is too big to fail, you know what? It's too big to exist.
Yeah. Let's bring back the Sherman Antitrust.
Exactly. Which, of course, you know, Bush's people have never heard of.
Right, but it's still on the books.
I know. And fourth and not least, we need an economic stimulus package to put people to work at decent wages, rebuilding our infrastructure, moving this country to energy efficiency and to sustainable energies, to teaching, to providing good education for our kids, to meeting all of the unmet needs which currently exist in our society. So those are the kind of basic principles that I will be operating under within the next few weeks.
Bernie, how do we get Barack Obama to fire Rob Rubin and Lawrence Summers and replace
them? Well,
you
know, I...
And hire you.
you know, that's what happens. I happen to like Barack Obama, and I think I want everybody
too.
To know
this. I want him to be president.
I want everybody to know this, that one of the leading culprits in all of this is a guy named Phil Graham. You remember Phil Graham, Tom?
Yeah.
Phil Graham was a senator from Texas.
And his wife, Wendy, by the way, a major lobbyist for Enron.
That's right. And Phil Graham was the leading deregulator in the country. He is the guy who created the Enron loophole to deregulate energy trading. He was the guy who pushed forward language to create all these new financial tools, the credit swaps, and so forth, which are part of the problem that we currently have. And this guy, this right-wing economist, of course, was the chief economic advisor to John McCain until he said some dumb things that became politically uncomfortable for McCain. But he is very, very close to McCain. And we can assume, and I don't know what, you know, McCain changes his position every 10 minutes. I don't know what he's saying today. But McCain certainly is one of the great cheerleaders in the Senate for this right-wing ideology of deregulating. Certainly, he has been unabashedly in favor of unfettered free trade. He is anti-union. So I think while Barack Obama on many issues does not go as far as I would like to go, and he is being influenced by some economists who I wish were not influencing him. On the other hand, he has other economists, by the way, and he has union economists.
Yeah, he's progressive got some good guys
economists.
There.
You're he's right. Listening to many points of view.
Yeah.
But don't underestimate Barack. He is a very, very smart guy. He understands a lot. And at this moment, this incredibly difficult moment in our history, which may be as difficult as any time before, since the Great Depression, the idea of having John McCain and his right-wing ideological friends at the helm is unthinkable.
Yeah, it's like taking the captain of the Titanic after they hit the iceberg and
exactly.
saying, here,
that's
have
exactly,
a bottle of whiskey.
That's a very, very good analogy.
Yeah, that's incredible. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Bernie will be taking your calls right after this break, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. You get to ask any question you want of a United States Senator. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Ben Bernanke is the 14th chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Every breath you take, every change of rate.
Every change of rate.
Jobs don't create jobs while we still stack fleet. I'll be watching you.
Yeah, we're watching you, Ben Bernanke.
Every single day, Bernanke takes my pay. When growth goes away, inflation will stay, and I'll be watching you. Oh, can't you see the Fed's where I should be? How my poor heart aches with each of your mistakes.
21 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us taking your calls. Bernie, ready to fire away at it?
Let's do it.
Okay. Sean in Vancouver, Washington. Sean, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, if anyone deserves to give themselves a pat on the back, let me say that you deserve to give yourself a pat on the back, first of all.
Thanks very much, Sean.
However, Senator Sanders, you know, all of us who've been in the activist community for years, certainly yourselves more so than myself, we've all made sacrifices over the years, you know, pointing out that the capitalist system is inherently unethical and unsustainable. I'm worried now that we're looking at, instead of a new deal for America, we're looking at a new deal for Wall Street. Is there anything you can tell me to reassure me that the Democrats are going to drive a hard bargain? They're going to the working class of America.
Hey, Sean, you hit the question, the $64 question. All I can tell you is I've been on the phone with a number of senators this morning raising just that issue. In my view, as I mentioned a moment ago, what Bush wants to do is prop up the economy for another 6 weeks in order to see McCain get elected. And what he is going to do is pass the burden on to the people who deserve it least, and those are people who have already seen a decline in their standard of living. So we're going to fight for a number of things. We're going to fight, A, to make sure that the people who caused the problem, the people who benefited from Bush's policies, are the ones who pay for any bailout that takes place. And second of all, that as part of the reforms, we make absolutely certain not only that we don't create a structure which will continue these failed ideological policies, but that we transform the economic system to start protecting working people and middle-income people who are in so much trouble today. If Bush can come up, can think that he could ask for $1 trillion, if he can make that request, well, we can make some very progressive requests to protect ordinary people. So, Sean, I think you're asking the right question, and I will do everything I can to push the Democratic leadership to stand up for working families in this moment of crisis.
That's great to hear. Patricia in Sacramento, California. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi there, Senator Sanders. Thanks for taking my call. I have a very quick two-part question. I'll take my answer off the air. You know, this morning, you guys mentioned it earlier, the AP was reporting if we bail out these banks, we're looking at about $500 million.
No, trillion.
Oh, trillion. I'm sorry, trillion. I'm forgetting my zeros. But my question is, considering we have this continued cost of the war, you know, we have a large trade deficit, we're making large interest payments to foreigners because we're borrowing all this money. My first part of the question is, are we going to bankrupt our treasury in trying to bail out these banks?
Patricia, that's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. I mean, you know, sometimes, Tom, without being rhetorical here, or even without being terribly political, it is hard to imagine the damage done to this country and the world by one administration in 8 years. It is really hard to fathom.
Well, but it also goes beyond that. When Reagan came into office, we were the world's largest creditor and the
right.
world's largest manufacturer and the world's largest exporter of manufactured goods. That has completely
reversed.
Well,
that whole ideology and what it is, but especially its acceleration over the last 8 years. So Patricia raises just one part of the damage done by these horrendous policies. Right now, we have approximately a $9.5 trillion national debt. And we are looking at a huge, huge deficit this year. No one knows exactly what it will be. Now, Bill Clinton was not, in my view, the greatest president in the history of the world, but he was a good president. Under Clinton, because he had vaguely sensible economic policies, our deficit was going down. We had surpluses. The national debt was, in fact, going down. Under this guy, the national debt is soaring. And what Patricia asked is, hey, we're not paying for the war in Iraq. You know, forget your views on the war. We're not paying for the war. We're not paying for tax breaks for billionaires. We're not paying. Next week they are going to deal with a fix for the alternative minimum tax. Tens and tens of billions of dollars not going to be paid for. So these Republicans who tell us how fiscally conservative and responsible they are have run have been more irresponsible than probably any administration in history. So what Patricia says now, if there's another bailout, what's going to happen? And the answer, Patricia, is unless we get it right, and unless we say to these people who have made billions from Bush's grossly unfair economic policies, unless those guys start paying for this bailout, then the national debt will simply go even higher big time.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, what these guys are trying to do in forestalling this until after November is setting up something after November. And if Barack Obama is president, when the bottom falls out, it's going to make 1929 look like a picnic. Because we don't have the manufacturing capability that we used to have to fall back on.
Well,
we had nothing to fall back on.
Among many other things.
Yeah, and we're deeply in debt, and we weren't then.
Right.
And, yeah, so anyhow, Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls, taking your questions. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program here on Air America Radio, 866-303-2270, sanders.senate.gov for Bernie's website and his newsletter. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-303-2270.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Senator Bernie Sanders with us this hour, as he has been for, I think, 5 years now. Our Brunch with Bernie hours. Senator Bernie Sanders and Bernie Warren in Manhattan has a question for you. Warren, you're on the air.
Hi, Senator. Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
I wanted to point out something I just picked up from Paul Krugman today, which is that Sweden had gone through a similar crisis and managed to work its way through it by buying up parts of its financial system, and possibly, although there's some question about turning a profit on the assets it bought up.
Yeah, they took 600 billion to us, 4% of their GDP, and they actually bought the companies and then later sold many of them at a profit and you know, yeah.
So
it's an interesting concept, but the underpinning of Sweden's politics and economic life is very different than our country. They're a social democratic country which believes and supports government playing an important role in their economic and social life. They have health care for all people. They have free college education. They take the environment very seriously. It's an interesting idea. But the idea of Bush's people or McCain's people even owning parts, significant parts of our economy and using that wealth for the public good is just hard to comprehend. Should we, in general, be moving toward an economy in which that we have public-private relations, situations in public-private joint ownership? The answer is yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense. Right now, for example, as Detroit collapses because they gave us automobiles that we didn't want, they're moving to China and so forth and so on, that they want is a handout of some $25 or $50 billion without any restrictions whatsoever. Well, if we're going to give Detroit money, we have to be very insistent on making sure they're producing what the American people want, and we gain part of that profit. But the problem is, unfortunately, the government of the United States today is not Sweden, and we have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, they're not going to nationalize it. It just politically couldn't happen. Ralph in Colorado Springs, Colorado. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you, folks. Free market capitalism is dead. The RTC succeeded because it eliminated all of the old management and all of the old investors. I was there.
You're talking about the Resolution Trust Corporation.
Right. Yet Hank Paulson and the taxpayer money
this is when they bailed out the
SNLs. AIG without wiping out the shareholders or the bondholders. Will Congress require the total elimination of everyone involved when it bails something out?
That's a very good question. It's something that I certainly would give consideration to, why you want to retain in leadership policy-making positions the people who caused the problem is hard for me to understand. But then again, we are dealing with the Bush administration. And you're raising the same question that was raised a few minutes ago by another caller, and that is, and the American people have got to be strong on this as well, is to tell the Congress, to tell the Democratic leadership, tell the Republicans that in this whole process, they just cannot fork over money to the same old bunch who have led us in this direction. But we need some fundamental changes in the way our economy works, and this is one part of that equation.
Tom in Columbus, Ohio. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good afternoon, Tom. Good afternoon, Bernie.
Hey, good afternoon.
Quick question or a comment, more or less. I'm just kind of, maybe I have a jaded view as an American, but I know a couple weeks ago you were talking about, Senator Sanders, you were talking about basic filibustering by the Republicans,
yes.
How many filibusters they have and whatnot. But
yes.
When Roberts and Alito were up in front and the Democrats were in control of the Congress, or the Democrats had the ability to filibuster, they weren't in control. But why didn't they filibuster?
Well, I was not in the Senate when Roberts and Alito came up, and you're raising a question that I think goes well beyond Supreme Court justices. And I think people have asked the question, are the Democrats being as aggressive as they might be in standing up to Republicans? And the answer, in my view, is they have not been. I think on issue after issue, if the Republicans, for example, choose to filibuster, what you can do and say, fine, you don't want to vote, you want to continue this debate going, okay, we will continue the debate. You tell us how long you want to discuss why we spend $10 billion every single month on the war in Iraq and charge that to our kids and our grandchildren. You want to debate about taxes and why cops pay a higher tax rate than billionaires do. Let's have that debate. The difficulty is that when you are in the majority, although, as you know, the majority is very slim, it's 51-49, including Lieberman, you have an obligation to get things done. And then if you get nothing done, people say you accomplished nothing. So the majority leader, Harry Reid, is between a rock and a hard place because he also wants to accomplish things. So we have accomplished some things. You've got a minimum wage that was raised. You raised the CAFE standards, so automobiles will get better mileage per gallon. We passed the strongest veterans education bill since World War II, which will make life a whole lot better for veterans. We have helped increase Pell Grants in education, done some decent things, not enough by any means. So the difficulty that somebody like a Harry Reid has is, on one hand, if you have a debate for 3 weeks on an issue, well, other things are not being done, and then you're going to be criticized for not doing it. But bottom line is, do I think the Democrats can and should be more aggressive? The answer is yes.
Well said. Amen. Kim in San Francisco, listening on
I wish I could see you tonight, Tom. In the past, we were afraid of the word liberal. Remember when we just kind of avoided that word? Well, we eventually took that word back, and I want to take back the word protectionism, because I think we've been stigmatized about using that word, and I think we need to stop. For, you know, other countries are protectionists. At this point, I have a government that wanted to protect me from 911, but not from this predatory economy. So I want to take back that word, protectionism. Good. Americans at this point, for God's sakes, we need to be protected, and it's not the terrorists at this point that are our biggest danger.
Well, I think you make a good point, and you know, and it's the philosophical divide in this country. By the way, and most people, the vast majority of people, are on our side. They're not on Bush's side ideologically. People believe that the government should have the responsibility, accept the responsibility in a civilized society of, among other things, making sure that all people have health care. With this incredible debacle taking place on Wall Street right now, just think about where we would be if Bush and his friends succeeded in privatizing Social Security.
Yeah.
If you had your account through Merrill Lynch, I don't even know, forget how much money you would have lost, I don't even know who would administer this account.
Right.
When these guys go belly up. But your point is a good point. In a democratic, civilized society, people have a right to expect that government will be there in terms of providing at least basic necessities of life, making sure that they have decent income, making sure that we don't have gross inequality in our society, making sure that all people have an opportunity for a good education, that people have health care, that people are not freezing to death in the wintertime. People have that right to be protected by the United States government. That's what society is about. And we certainly should not be embarrassed in believing that. And, in fact, I can tell you that the vast majority of American people support that.
Amen. Greg in Scranton, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good afternoon, everybody. Senator Sanders, two questions, if you will. How solvent is the mechanism that finances the FDIC?
Okay.
And we always hear that we're insured up to $100,000. Well, what guarantees that?
Uh-huh. Greg, I don't have the numbers in front of you, but obviously, if the Bush administration is asking for an infusion of what will amount to hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, we have serious financial problems, and I suspect that every agency of government which is related to these economic activities is going to be hard pressed.
Yeah, Linda in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Linda, we just have a minute before the break here.
Yes, hi. First, I want to talk about the surprises. The August surprise being Georgia provoking Russia, and the September surprise being the financial meltdown. Now, I expect that there's also going to be October and November surprises.
Well, I don't know that this is a surprise Bush administration is feeling very good about. This is a collapse of the economy that does not make Bush or McCain, I think, look very, very good. The issue of Georgia is another issue, and I would tend to agree with you that the media has suggested that it's all Russia's fault and that innocent little country of Georgia was invaded, but the evidence appears to be that it was, in fact, Georgia that started the war. Russia, I think, overreacted. Russia has been too slow in removing its troops. We got a lot of concerns about Russia, but I think to ignore the reality that Georgia launched that invasion against Ossetia is to miss a very significant point.
Yeah. And the October surprise, we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe we should run a contest.
I think these guys may be running out of surprises here. They don't have much of an economy left.
Yeah, they may. They may well be. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. If it's Friday, it's Brunch with Bernie. Taking your calls. We'll be right back. Bernie Sanders, his website, sanders.senate.gov. I'm going to drop into our live chat room. Head on over to tomhartman.com, airamerica.com, of course, as well.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Before the hour, 866-303-2270, our number, Tom Hartman with you. Bernie Sanders on the line. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. And, excuse me, Dave in Detroit, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon. Great programming, as usual. I've got a comment as well as a question, but the comment is this. I'm a believer, and you may accuse me of overthinking this, that the GOP is pretty much that the people, the powers to be of the GOP are basically trying to hand this thing to the Dems only because of, I think we all agree there could be catastrophic economic conditions, right around the corner. And can you imagine 4 years of another Republican administration on top of the 8 years that Bush gave us? And it could be very detrimental to the long-term health of the GOP. I thought McCain was a bad pick, and followed up by Palin. I think they're just having a hard time overcoming the racism aspect. But I believe that the Palin pick was so bad it proved it to me.
Well, Dave, I don't agree with you. There is no question that the next president of the United States is going to have unbelievable problems to deal with. No question about it. In terms of this economy on the verge of collapse, a healthcare system disintegrating, a huge trade deficit, a huge national debt, being isolated and disrespected all over the world, an ongoing war in Iraq. I mean, the problems, global warming, the problems are just extraordinary. But to think that somebody is plotting up there and saying, well, this will be great. Barack Obama will get elected and he'll fail and then we'll take power again. I don't think it really works like that. I mean, what you should know, for example, right now, is the Chamber of Commerce and all of the big businesses are pouring in tens of millions of dollars, through 527s, against Barack Obama and in the Employee Free Choice Act, for example, just, you know, lying about what it does. They want to see McCain elected. So I don't agree with that line of thinking. I think the Republicans, the big money interest, want McCain in, and they'll go from there. But that's my view.
Stacy in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Bernie, you were great on Bill Maher a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you were.
I have a question. If I got a subpoena and I didn't show up, I think I know where I'd be, and it'd be at the Gray Bar Hotel. So the Congress issued subpoenas to Harriet Myers and Josh Bolten and Karl Rove that they ignored, and nothing's happened. And yesterday, everybody in Alaska said they're not going to respond to their subpoenas either. What is going on?
Well, you have folks who do not necessarily believe in the law, believe that they are above the law. And obviously that mentality emanates at the White House. You have a president who neither understands the Constitution or respects the Constitution, who, among many other things, engages in signing ceremonies by which he says he will enforce this or that provision of the law, depending on what he believes. So I think the message comes on down from the very heights of the White House that the law is not particularly important and you can ignore it. And that is just one of the remnants that this administration has left this country.
Yeah. Joe, listening online from Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Joe, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, isn't it ironic that all Americans have gone to pay for an insurance company? All Americans cannot have insurance in this country.
Yeah, I guess that is an interesting point, Joe. You're now part owner of an insurance company, but you can't afford to buy your own health insurance. Look, you have an economy that is run for the super rich by the super rich who could care less about ordinary Americans. And we remain the only major country on earth that does not provide health care to all people as a right of citizenship. Our insurance companies make huge profits and fight against any effort to provide universal health care to all of our people. Yes, that is one of the many ironies, I think, that we see in today's economy, Joe.
Carol in Mesa, Arizona, listening on KPHX. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Is it too much to ask of our legislators that they read everything they vote on before it's passed? The congressmen have a lot of assistance. Please make sure that there are no little bombs hidden in whatever they're trying to pass now as a bailout. And whatever language that Phil Graham and Leach and the other guy snuck in before, make sure it's revoked in whatever gets passed.
Well, Carol, that's a very good point. And sometimes what happens is legislation with hundreds of pages comes before you, you know, literally 10 minutes before you have to vote. And that is obviously not an acceptable way to do government. In terms of Graham, Leach, Bliley, that legislation, they could stick that one in. Everybody knew what was in that. And that was part of the whole deregulatory effort. And they were telling us that we just wanted to get government out of the way so these big financial institutions could do their thing and create wealth for everybody. And now we're in the process of bailing them out.
Ken in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, listening to Wins. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
I usually save my screaming at the media to McCain commercials, but, Senator, you've offered one disingenuous response after another to these questions. Number one, you extol Harry Reid for his restraint and not allowing for impeachment. I've heard you say no impeachment. Why should we trust Democrats?
Fine, listen, Ken, fine. Then vote Republican. Vote for Ralph Nader. I mean, you are in a situation right now. You have to make the choice. And if you think McCain should be the president of the United States because you don't trust Democrats, I'm not a Democrat, as it happened. I work with the Democrats. And I think it is, if you look at them issue by issue, the Democrat position and their behavior is far, far better than the Republicans. Is it all that I would want it to be? No, it is not. If your alternative is to vote for McCain or perhaps Ralph Nader, go for it. And we'll have another four more years of the disastrous policies. That's my view.
Yeah, and in fact, it'll get far worse. It'll get a whole lot far worse. Bernie, we've only got about 30 seconds here. It would be unfair to bring a caller in. Closing thoughts on what Congress should do.
I mean, the last week has told us how bankrupt our right-wing friends are ideologically. It is terribly important that everybody do everything they can to get involved in the political process and make sure that we do not have four more years of Bush's policies through John McCain.
Amen. Once again, it's not enough to just vote. We have to get active.
Right.
Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov. Sign up for his newsletter. It's great. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
Always great having you. And coming up next, Robbie Batra, the professor of economics at Southern Methodist University.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program here on this beautiful Friday. What is the date today? It's the 19th. Thank you very much. I lost my calendar. I can't keep track of dates. I have no sense of time. Welcome back to our show. Robbie Batra is with us. Our favorite economist, our regular here on the show, our economic guru. He's a professor of economics at Southern Methodist University, the international New York Times and internationally best-selling author of numerous books, including Greenspan's Fraud, one of my favorites, and my other one of his favorites of his books, his latest, The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. And Robbie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, the economic chaos that you were predicting about a month ago on this program, it is spooky how accurate you were.
It's amazing. It's just amazing what's going on. This week has been so hectic and tumultuous.
Now, one of the things that a few months ago you were talking about on the program, somebody called and asked about investment strategies, and I want to really talk more about macro than microeconomics here, but nonetheless, you had said that you were buying gold and you were also buying puts on the gold, so if it went down, you wouldn't lose everything. The SEC today is talking about making it illegal to short sell at least financial services
sector
stocks. Mm-hmm. It seems to me, from my relatively limited knowledge of the inside workings of the stock market and stock trading, I've never been a stock trader, although I think I have some sense of it. It seems to me that if they put an end to short selling for the short period of time, by coincidence until the elections, that the market will go up because there's no short sellers, so all the downside risk is gone basically for anybody who wants to speculate in these stocks. It'll drive the value of the stocks up, particularly the financial services stocks. That will allow them to borrow against the equity of their own stock. Their net wealth or worth will increase, those financial services companies, and which will give them access to credit that they can then, so basically the bubble will get blown even bigger. So that the day after the election, say if Barack Obama is president, the bubble will burst, the whole thing will collapse, and all the commentators on TV and the corporate media are going to be saying, see, they elected a Democrat, and the markets are in their wisdom knew that that's a disaster, and now we have the next Great Depression. You think I'm crazy?
Yeah. Well, I was about to say that the reason they are intervening so much, which is totally against their philosophy.
Right.
They always talk about deregulation and free markets and so on, and now they are intervening like mad, and they're doing it to help John McCain win, because now suddenly the economy is back on is the number one topic now in the campaign.
Right.
And they're petrified of Obama. Really, they're petrified because George Bush is worried about a lot of investigations that will occur once Obama is in the office.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people who might go to jail if Obama becomes president. Karl Rove at the top of the list.
That's exactly what it is. I'm very worried about it. Obama has actually already defeated the Republicans because, remember, they tried to Hillary Clinton to beat him and be the nominee, and they tried their best, Rush Limbaugh and so many others. So Obama has already beaten them, and so they're very worried about him. And they're going to try everything to make McCain look good and create problems for Obama. And you just pointed out one scenario, but I think what they're doing right now is going to create so much inflation in the future.
Yes.
It reminds me of what Greenspan did in 2001. He panicked and cut interest rates very sharply, and now we are paying price for all that housing bubble that resulted.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're panicking because John McCain is slipping in the polls again. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's slipping in the polls, and they are panicking.
Yeah, what a surprise.
So, yeah.
You know, Enron was a $63 billion meltdown, and it caused enormous pain and tragedy for thousands of families and many people all around the United States. It was $63 billion. Lehman Brothers was over $600 billion.
That's right.
But you look at the derivatives market. Now, the derivatives are these instruments that, for all practical purposes, didn't even exist until, by and large, the Clinton administration, if my understanding of this is correct, at least in their current form, credit swaps and derivatives came about as a result of a piece of legislation called the Commodities Futures Modernization Act, which basically deregulated any kind of trading in derivatives and credit swaps, which led to this explosion. And the current worldwide market in these derivatives is $450 trillion. Now,
that's why they're sowing seeds for a collapse of the dollar.
There's no way that $450 trillion is the derivatives market, and this is the bubble. Nobody's talking about this, but tell me if I'm wrong. It appears to me that the bubble, the housing bubble has burst. We had the dot-com bubble, blah-de-blah-de-blah. But underneath all of that, this giant bubble that really was inflating worldwide is the derivatives and credit swap bubble, and it's a $450 trillion. It's a bigger bubble than the entire economy of the United States, and if that thing goes, I don't think that this will be like anything the world has seen since since, you know, geez, I don't know. I mean, you know, the Great Depression of the 1750s or something.
Well, what you're suggesting is going to happen next year.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because
they're gonna hold it off until after the election.
They're buying time. They're buying time now. McCain will still be defeated, and you're right. Obama might get blamed for the entire fiasco, but I don't think he will, because they may have bought maybe 2 or 3 weeks of time. Just see what happens next month in October, and just before election. All these things are going to come back to haunt them, because what's going to happen now? They said they are going to buy back all these bad mortgages from the banks. That's one thing. They're also insuring the bad money market funds, and so they are stopping this panic in the market.
But basically, they're bailing out all the fat cats.
That's
it
right.
Doesn't help you and me.
Right. And then what's going to happen is, it's going to be business as usual. Speculation is going to start again. Oil will start rising again, because, you know, it's all speculation. So it will be speculation as usual. Oil will start rising again. They will prevent the short sellers, but they are not going to stop the rise in the price of oil. And once again, there will be panic. So it's a matter that I think they're buying maybe 2 or 3 weeks at the most.
That's that little?
That little. Oh, yeah. It's a sign of total panic. You know, I mean, just look at Republicans going to start an RTC-type solution, buying all these mortgages from the banks.
Right, and let's, for people who don't know what we're talking about here, the Resolution Trust Corporation was something that was created during the last Bush administration.
Right.
And as a result of the deregulation of the savings and loan industry, which had taken place in part under the Carter administration, but mostly under the Reagan administration and the Bush administration, the savings and loans were deregulated. And so Neil Bush got into the act with Silverado Savings and Loan. He was one of the guys who made out like a bandit on that.
Yeah,
and the whole
right.
Keating.
And he swindled.
That's
what worries the most. As the Republicans are concerned, that once Obama is in charge, all these things that they've done in the past are going to come back, and investigations will occur.
But with the Resolution Trust Corporation, when the government set up the RTC, they did two things. One was they basically fired everybody from all these banks. I mean, Neil Bush lost his job at Silverado, right?
Yeah.
Just like John McCain's son, by the way, just a month ago resigned from a bank in Arizona that's now on the edge of insolvency.
Yeah, and even John McCain was caught in that scandal.
Right.
Remember the Keating Five?
Yep, absolutely. But the RTC, you know, kind of stabilized that, but the savings and loan business or industry, as it were, is a fly compared to the elephant of the banking
that's
and
right.
investment industry.
That's right. That's why I'm saying that this thing is going to, you know, they're buying only about 2 or 3 weeks, and then it's all going to make a comeback, because the source of the problem is not just one little market of short sellers in the financial market. It's the entire speculative system. Why
right.
was I mean, they were constantly saying oil demand from India and China is raising the price of oil. Now we find out it wasn't. It was speculation.
Right. And let's get into, you know, what it is that actually creates an economy. You know, where does real wealth come from?
Right. Let's talk about the fundamentals.
Right. Exactly. Let's just review the fundamentals real quickly after the break. And then at the bottom of the hour, we'll pick up some calls for you. We have Dr. Ravi Batra with us, the New York Times best-selling economist from SMU.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes. Good authors too.
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's It's Friday. Normally it's our anything goes, but boy, anything is going right now in the stock market. I want to devote this hour to that, and well, actually the rest of the show, in fact, by and large, to what's going on, the political consequences of it, the economic consequences of it, but also, let's just do a quick review of how we got where we are. We have with us Ravi Batra, RAVIBATRA.com is his website. He's a professor of economics, RaviBatra.com. Professor of Economics at SMU, Southern Methodist University, the internationally best-selling, New York Times best-selling author of Greenspan's Fraud, and his latest, The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. And I'm telling you, if you haven't read these two books, you are not economically literate. And they're brilliant. And the guy who on this program for years has been so spot on and absolutely predicting pretty much every turn that that this economy has been taking. Ravi, 30 years ago, from let's just first of all, you're still here with us, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. it seems to me that the big difference between right now and 1929, the biggest difference. I mean, in 29 we saw through the 20s we saw the deregulation of a whole bunch of different and a whole bunch of different financial things. You know, speculation was running wild. There were some attempts, you know, Ponzi had done his thing in 1917. There were some attempts to get control of craziness in general. But basically, there was this, you know, several Republican administrations, three Republican administrations in a row, that just took this hands-off approach to the economy. And it led to, first of all, a housing bubble in the early 20s down in Florida that spread across the United States that popped in 1927. And then a stock bubble that popped in 1929. But the difference between then and now is that then we had a manufacturing base to fall back on. We still made stuff in the United States. So there were still, even though there was massive unemployment, 25% I think at the peak of the Great Depression, we were still creating wealth. And 30 years of insane economic policies have shifted most of that wealth-creating manufacturing overseas. So we don't have that to fall back on. Number one, and the other big difference is that when in 1930 the United States was basically not only the largest manufacturing powerhouse in the world, the largest exporter of finished goods in the world, the largest lender to other countries in the world. We were a net holder of assets, but. You know, you flip that over and look at today, and we were, by the way, all those things were true when the day that Ronald Reagan was sworn into office. But now with 30 years of Greenspan-onomics, Reaganomics, we are now the largest debtor in the world. We're in debt to the tune of over $100,000 per family just in the national debt. This latest bailout, you know, a couple $100 billion is you know, $1,000 or so per wage earner in the United States. Bush is not, Paulson yesterday didn't say a word about, oh, we're going to raise taxes to pay for this thing. So that means that they're going to borrow more money from our children and grandchildren. We're broke. We don't have manufacturing capability to fall back on, and we don't have money in the bank to fall back on. And at some point, the other nations in the world are going to say, you know, Not only are you guys broke, but we're going to stop loaning you money. Am I painting an accurate picture here, Dr. Batra?
Oh, yes, very, very, very much. And well, you might have noticed that this week alone, in one day, gold jumped almost $100.
Yeah.
See, that shows that people are very worried about inflation. They don't have trust in the currency of any country because every country is printing money now. And so this is a recipe for the collapse of the dollar. And when that happens, so the difference this time from the 1930s would be that we will have the worst of both worlds. We will have rising prices and collapsing employment at the same time, whereas in the 30s, employment fell sharply, but at least prices also fell so that people could buy things cheaper. Mm-hmm. So now we will have the worst of both worlds. We're going to have inflation and a collapsing economy at the same time. So
right. In the 1840s, you know, we had the collapse of the Second Bank of the United States. I think it was in 1846. And that was followed by exactly that kind of a depression, an inflationary, massive layoff depression that many people suggest really was one of the prime things that caused the Civil War more than anything else, the economic chaos.
That could be it. And see, whenever a country imports a lot and has a huge trade deficit. So when its economy collapses, then it has inflation.
Right.
In the 30s, as you pointed out yourself, we used to have an export surplus. We used to have a trade surplus at that time.
Yeah.
So when the economy collapsed, we had a deflation. But now things this time are very different.
So we're looking at the Weimar Republic. We're looking at the German economy in the 1920s here.
Maybe not that bad. I hope not. The way they're printing money, this is crazy now. But I don't think it will be, inflation would be that bad. But still, if you are losing jobs and prices are rising at the same time, that's incredible amount of misery. The misery index would skyrocket.
Right. And what happened in the Weimar Republic, although the inflation rate was, 1,000% a year, it might here be 20, 30, 40, 50, something like that,
right. Was
it set up fascism. And that's a terrible thing to contemplate as well. We're talking with Dr. Ravi Batra. His books, Greenspan's Fraud and the New Golden Age, RaviBatra.com, his website. Check it out, RaviBatra. I will be back with your calls and questions for Dr. Batra right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Tonight, Norman Solomon and I will be having a conversation with the good folks in San Francisco. I'm broadcasting live, and a tip of the hat and many, many thanks to John Scott and all the great folks here at Green 960 for making it possible for us to do this show from their studios. Yeah, but tonight, 7 to 9 p.m., doors open at 6:30, Broadway Studios. That's at 435 Broadway Street in San Francisco. An evening with Tom Hartman and Norman Solomon. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be fascinating. We're going to have a great time, but you've got to register in advance. You got to sign up, and the way to do that is to go to green960.com. And by the way, the cutoff deadline, is noon today Pacific time, so you got an hour and a half. So get over there to green960.com if you want to show up tonight to see Norman Solomon and I. Ravi Batra is with us. Ravi, before we take any calls, any points that you wanted to make that we haven't covered?
Yeah, the thing is that the fundamentals of the economy we were talking about, they are really bad right now.
Mm-hmm.
John McCain thinks that the fundamentals of the people, essentially he's right, except that people are being laid off right now.
Right.
Yeah, and people are the fundamentals. Their wages and their productivity, those are the two fundamentals, and that's, in terms of those fundamentals, we have the worst economy right now in 30 years because eventually it is a matter of supply and demand. The main source of supply is productivity. The main source of demand are wages. Because of Reagan's policies and other policies like free trade and so on, productivity has been rising sharply, but wages have not. And so supply has been rising faster than demand. To plug that supply-demand gap, they have been creating more and more debt because debt also raises demand, but artificially. Now they find that they have created so much debt that the banks are in trouble themselves. So now the only solution is to raise the wages through the rise in the minimum wage. They are not even close to that solution. So this problem is only going to continue, and we are going to have a disastrous economy next year.
Yeah, I agree. And if they just jack the minimum wage up to 14% or $14 an hour or in that neighborhood, and if they were to pass the Employee Free Choice Act so that people could easily join unions, it would begin the path of restoring wages for people. Then people would have money to buy things, including houses, and that would put the economy back on track.
Well, the minimum wage is the main solution because in terms of the prices in 1969, The minimum wage at that time was $10 in terms of today's prices. Today it's $6. So they have to raise it to at least that $10, because in 1969, our unemployment rate was the lowest ever in history, 3.5%. So rising minimum wage, when productivity is rising, is a great thing for the economy, and this is what they don't understand.
Yeah, although in 1960 we also had trade policies that kept our jobs and our industries here in the
United States. Well, yeah, that helped us raise the minimum wage. So they have to change a lot of things, but still the domestic economy is still 85% of the GDP. So even a rise in the minimum wage, if they didn't do anything else, will still be very beneficial.
Yep, absolutely. Lawrence in Berkeley, California, listening on Green 960.
Yes, hello. How you doing, Reverend Mercer?
Thank you.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to talk about inequality. You know, everybody's talking about regulation, but the serious problem is that the average CEO in the United States now makes, there are various ways of estimating it, but I see 411-1 versus the average worker. And in 1980, before Reagan, it was 40 times. And in Japan now, it's still only 15-1. It's like 11-1. So the question is, you know, everybody says that if you have a certain level of inequality, you build up debt because workers can't pay. You know, the people who are making so little can't pay without borrowing, and then the debt breaks. But I'm wondering if in some way you can quantify at what level of inequality does the economy collapse?
Well, we can look at what happened in the 1930s. at that time, we don't have the figures for CEO wages at that time, but we do know that 1% of the people, of the families, had about 36% of wealth. Today, 1% has 40% of wealth. So we are very close to that point. We have exceeded that point. The only reason they are keeping the economy alive is through all this borrowing from China and Japan. At that time, other countries did not have much money to lend to us. But we all know this. That is now, that bubble is bursting now. So it's not going to go on more.
Yeah. Kirk in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, Tom, thanks for sharing our air, and I think I could probably speak for a lot of people, and I'm very pleased that you have Dr. Batra on today. I've been having a Dr. Batra craving all week long for his assessment of what's going
too.
On. Dr. Batra, if I remember correctly, on your show has sort of posited that Senator Obama very well may be in a position, and I think Dr. Batra has even said that he believes that Senator Obama will transform the global economy in relation to how wages and productivity, the whole economic structure that's in place now, would sort of be overturned by Senator Obama. Does he still hold that position?
Yeah, and in fact, Kirk, let me add to that, if I may, Ravi. Obama has among his advisors Rubin and some of these other guys who were actually the architects of much of this deregulation.
See, that would change once he's elected, and then he would pay attention to their advice, and that won't help. Then he would go to the fundamentals, real fundamentals, wages and productivity, and then he will realize that he will raise the minimum wage. I think they are already talking about raising the minimum wage.
Yeah.
But then he would also see that we have to restrain trade and so on. Otherwise, raising the wages is not easy. So he will. His economic advisors will change.
Yeah. Well, from your lips to God's ears. Or perhaps they'll have a revelation. Bob Rubin got his $19 million or $17 million a year, I guess, at Citigroup. And now he's got his money. Maybe he'll change his mind. I don't know. We'll see. Mike in Santa Barbara, you're on the air with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to discuss a little bit the role of the Federal Reserve in this whole fiasco and specifically in the bailouts, the Federal Reserve being like the biggest misnomer in world history, probably, because it's not federal and they really don't carry any reserves. So I'm kind of wondering, is this just another scam in the making? There's this headline the other day, $85 billion in this
Federal Reserve orchestrated bailout of AIG. And, you know, I don't really see that the Federal Reserve has any value added in the whole situation. And is that just another parasitic organization, you know, privatized organization that's getting ready to fleece more billions from the taxpayers in this whole situation?
Well, no, they want fleece money from the taxpayer. They are printing more money.
Right, they're fleecing money from everybody in as much as they're reducing the value of our money.
Yeah, right, exactly. And they're printing money now to thwart the panic. And it's mostly a political move. If John McCain was not sleeping in Paul City, when John McCain was ahead suddenly a few days ago, oh, you should have seen all these Republicans talking, oh, what a great thing they have. Now, suddenly, he's slipping in the polls again, and they are panicking. And it's clear when you follow policy out of panic, the end result is very bad. That's what Greenspan did in 2001, and see where we are now. And now Bernanke is doing the same thing. That's the problem. And I think this inflation is going to make a huge comeback next year.
Yeah. And by huge comeback, I mean, I remember the inflation of the 70s. It wasn't fun, but it wasn't.
It won't be as bad. It's hard to tell if it will be that bad or not. It all depends on what other countries do also, whether they keep lending us money or not. If they don't, then it could be very bad.
Right, because we'll have to raise the amount that we pay on our debt in order to get people to buy the debt. So
that
treasuries,
the dollar will really fall. Right. Really sharply fall.
Right, and so treasuries start offering treasuries at 10-12%. We're going to see interest rates at the consumer level of 15-25%,
exactly,
conceivably.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. We have a minute before the break. Joan in Kingman, Arizona. You're on with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Oh, okay. I feel like a babe in the woods with all these experts on economics, because I really am economically illiterate. And so I have a very stupid question. In combination with everything that's going on now, and in light of two stolen elections and other underhanded tactics, is it theoretically possible that the present situation could be a coup d'etat in the making on the part of the Republicans and their corporate cronies? Could this be the October surprise 1 month early? Could it be our Kristallnacht?
You mean postponing the elections, or
did the GOP set this thing up as a way of for example, the economic disaster in Germany in the 20s paved the way for Hitler, you know? So I guess your question is, was this thing set? And we'll pick up your answer on the other side of this break. We've got to take a break here, but what role, I guess, probably another way to say it, what role did the Republican Party, and for that matter, the Democratic Party as well, play in setting this whole thing up? We're talking with Dr. Ravi Batra, international best-selling author and economist. RaviBatra.com, his website.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Doesn't support abortion or being gay. It's not her fault, just the Republican way. Sarah, Sarah Palin, queen of the Alaskan frontier.
Welcome back. Ravi Batra's with us, our economics guru. Economics professor at Southern Methodist University, internationally and New York Times best-selling author of numerous books, including Greenspan's Fraud and his latest, The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. You can check it out at his website, Ravi Batra, RaviBatra.com. And Ravi, first of all, just to follow up on that question from the caller in the last hour, the I don't so much see any kind of a political conspiracy hand here as beyond the political conspiracy to make a bunch of folks very, 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 very rich.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think there is any possibility of coup d'etat. We didn't have that even during the Civil War, because there are three branches of power, and the military won't obey. The military is supposed to uphold the Constitution, and if something is unconstitutional, the military won't obey that order.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully.
And especially when George Bush is so unpopular right now.
Well, you know, let's not forget. I don't know how funny this is or not, but back on October 17th of last year, a reporter asked the following question. Mr. President, following up on Vladimir Putin for a moment, he said recently that next year, when he has to step down according to the Constitution as the president, he may become prime minister, in effect keeping power and dashing any hopes for a genuine democratic transition there. And at that point, Bush interrupts the reporter and says, I've been planning that myself.
Yeah, but Putin is very popular in Russia.
Yeah.
It's a big difference.
Yeah, he actually is, yeah. Barbara in Vancouver, you're on with Bravi Batra. Hey, Barbara.
Oh, hi. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I was wondering if you could just help me understand, with the government buying these mortgages, is this going to benefit only the banks, or will it offer some kind of hope to mortgage consumers in danger of losing their homes?
I think it's going to benefit mostly the banks, but the banks would have more money to lend to the public. So that's the idea, that
yeah.
The interest rates have already come down and they will fall a little more. I don't know if they're talking about stopping more foreclosures or not. That is yet to be seen, but I'm sure there are discussions going on between the Democrats and the Republicans, and most likely the Democrats would insist that we also reduce the number of foreclosures in any agreement.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. But the bottom line is that in terms of free lunches and bailouts, and yes, you can keep your golden parachutes, that's all going to go to the CEOs and the millionaires and the billionaires.
That's right. That's
and
right.
What's going to happen for the average person, for the rest of us, is, maybe you can get a mortgage now.
Yeah, exactly. A very small amount, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Deborah in Albany, California. Hey, Deborah.
Good morning. Hoping and thank you for all your good work. I have two scenarios I'd love to hear Dr. Batra's thoughts on. I was one of nine advisors from the housing industry to the Resolution Trust Corporation back during the FISLIC crisis, and one of my main concerns is that people are not differentiating between Fannie and Freddie and the subprime ninja loans that were created, I think, to satisfy the yield hog hedge funds. And so all of these risky tranches of ninja loans and subprime loans were peddled to investors worldwide. But the biggest banks have been trying to dismantle Freddie and Fannie for years because that liquidity allows smaller lenders to compete.
Right.
My concern, when I listened very closely, when Hank Paulson said, well, first we're going to allow the portfolio to increase, and then we're going to force them to sell 10% of their portfolio each year starting in 2010. And my belief is that means they're going to dump the trash loans on Fannie and Freddie, and the private equity groups, so let's guess Carlyle Group and some of the banks and some of the investors, will line up for a distress sale, deep discount purchase of the prime Fannie and Freddie tranches.
Right. They'll end up with the assets that actually have real value. And in the meantime, Fannie and Freddie, instead of being nationalized as they should have been, will be slowly reprivatized.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one other quick thing. I was looking at my dwindling retirement account yesterday, and I was flabbergasted. Someone must have called someone, because in the financial stocks, I mean, a normal high volume day might be 18, 20 million shares for a stock. I saw three, maybe four, financial stocks, mostly the cheaper ones, where there were purchases of 200 million shares. We're
right.
talking like a 12.
Right. These were the short sellers covering their shorts and making out like bandits, or they were people buying what they thought was a good asset because they'd been driven.
Well, that volume is.
It's
to
mind-boggling.
Me means
we only Deborah, I'm sorry, we only have 30 seconds left. I'd like to get Dr. Batra's thoughts.
Yeah,
on this.
Or somebody got an inside knowledge that Paulson is going to do something about.
Oh
it.
Yeah, okay, of course.
That's the there's so much corruption in the government.
Yeah, and so yes, and in fact, I mean, we know that in Tom DeLay's office, his staff was trading in the stock market with inside information because it's not illegal. And when Brian Baird, the congressman from Washington State, tried to introduce legislation to make it illegal for inside trading by the staff of members of Congress, the Republicans blocked it. So it's illegal for you or me. Martha Stewart goes to jail for it. But Tom DeLay's guys, they made out like bandits. RobbieBatra.com. Thanks so much, Robbie.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Boy, so much going on in the world. I'm telling you, the GOP staffers. You remember 2004? I want to get back to the economic stuff here in just a minute, but there's some other issues. This, for example, Charlie Savage writing for the Boston Globe, January 22nd, 2004. Okay, step into the Wayback Machine, go back 3.5 years. Republican staff members of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee infiltrated opposition computer files for a year, monitoring secret strategy memos and periodically passing on copies to the media, Senate officials told the Globe. From the spring of 2002 until at least April 2003, members of the GOP committee staff exploited a computer glitch that allowed them to access restricted Democratic communications without a password. Trolling through hundreds of memos, they were able to read talking points and accounts of private meetings discussing which judicial nominees Democrats would fight and with what tactics. The Office of Senate Sergeant-at-Arms William Pickle has already launched an investigation into how excerpts from 15 Democratic memos showed up in the pages of conservative-leaning newspapers and were posted to a website last November. You get this? The Republicans were spying on the Democrats. Republicans in the Senate. This is the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. This was when the Republicans were running the show. Were spying on the Democrats. And I submit to you that this is still going on. I just got a great note here from Mark Crispin Miller saying this scandal is connected to the larger plot by Bush and company to sabotage America's elections. Because we've got Stephen Spoonamore, Karl Rove's IT guru. He's talking about how they're going to use these machines. He's given a deposition. We're going to get into this story a little more next week. But I just wanted to give you a heads up on it. And let's not forget. You know, we've got to do away with FISA, we got to, et cetera, because, you know, we've got to be able to spy on people because to stop terrorists. What about spying on Democrats? What about spying on Democrats? It seems like, you know, there's some real stuff here. And also, let's keep in mind that what we're looking at here with the Bush, Cheney, McCain, Palin bunch is really the old Iran-Contra bunch. I mean, they're back. They never went away, but they're back in power. That's what's going on. And then, of course, you know, the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, repealing Glass-Steagall, and things like this. Bob Rubin was there going, yeah, cool. Now, maybe, you know, Gloria Swanson was a friend of mine and was on the board of directors of the Community for Abused Kids that Louise and I started back in 1978 in New Hampshire, the New England Salem Children's Village. And SalemChildren'sVillage.com and Hunter School, excuse me, .org and HunterSchool.org, by the way, if you're looking for a good charity. And I used to, in every 6 months or so, I'd get down to New York and she had been a vegetarian since 1929, and we'd just, you know, cook some vegetables in her kitchen and sit and talk, and she'd tell me these wild stories about Joe Kennedy, who she hated, who had been her lover for a short while and her agent for a while and ripped her off pretty badly, at least according to her. And one of the stories, as I recall, was, and I've seen this elsewhere as well, but I particularly remember Gloria Swanson talking about it. Franklin Roosevelt appointing him to be the head of the SEC, as I recall, the Securities and Exchange Commission, in fact started the thing and put Joe Kennedy in charge of it because, in Roosevelt's words, or words to this effect, it takes a crook to catch a crook. So maybe Bob Rubin really should be part of Obama's team. In fact, maybe he should be in charge of the SEC because he was one of the cheerleaders for what has happened. I don't know. It's something to think about. It's something to think about. Nancy, I don't know if she wants her last name used, but she mentions, this may seem inconsequential. She sends me a note. This may seem inconsequential in the scope of politics, but on Monday I put out an Obama-Biden sign, and by Tuesday morning it was stolen. Started looking around the western suburbs and have not seen one Obama sign, but all kinds of McCain signs. This seems like more than a coincidence. Has anyone else had this problem? So, some stuff to toss out there. And of course, you know, the economic mess, the economic meltdown continues. It continues on steroids. And, $1 trillion and part of this, by the way, there's a suggestion that part of this is going to be funded by the U.S. selling some of its gold reserves. We have, I believe, around $3 trillion in gold reserves in the United States. I'd have to go dig out the numbers and look them up again. We have one of the largest gold reserves in the world, and if not the largest. So we're going to further impoverish our country. Maybe that's because we just, like, can't borrow anymore because we've run out of the ability to borrow. I mean, we're so badly in debt. You know, we're paying over $1 billion a day in interest on the national debt that was run up, just on the national debt that was run up by Ronald Reagan, Bush Sr., and Bush Jr., just on that portion of it. The actual amount is $1.6 billion a day. $1 billion of that is just on the national debt run up by those three presidents. That is a tax. It has to be paid for with tax dollars. That is a tax. Republicans say that they're opposed to taxes. They're going to cut taxes. No, what they do is they start borrowing. That is an even worse tax because when you borrow and spend, you still have to pay the dollars back, but you have to pay them back with interest. It, you know, makes the bankers very happy. They make a nice profit. But, you know, that's what happens. Anyhow, Jim in Detroit. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind here? Anything goes Friday. What's up?
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm a dedicated listener. You cover the issues better than anybody else I've heard on the radio.
Thank you.
Saying that, I am a county commissioner just north of Detroit, and nobody talks about one issue that I think is going to be devastating to our communities, and that is, as the economy goes down, we're losing our tax base. We're going to be cutting police, firemen, all the services that people expect. And we don't have any way of, you know, running up debts. We don't have any way of covering that. Mm-hmm. So as we approach insolvency as a nation, we're going to be losing a huge amount of what people depend on for their lives. And it's something that is basically never discussed.
Yeah. And this happened during the Great Depression as well. You had communities going bankrupt as well. And individuals and towns and, in fact, it was one of the ways that the federal government acquired so much of the federal land that we have right now. It was during the Depression when counties and states could no longer afford to maintain land that was not necessarily in use. I mean, you're talking more about urban stuff. But it's going to make it harder for – probably is going to make it harder because interest rates are going to go up because of this inflation. It's going to make it harder for counties and for municipalities to borrow money.
That's
right.
To
flow bonds.
One more thing I'd like to say is that when John McCain says, oh, well, I'll just cut all those wasteful spending by the federal government, when he talks about earmarks, that's less than 2% of the federal debt deficit for this year.
Yeah.
And what he's talking about is taking the money that one of the few sources that we have that isn't drying up, or actually it has been, but not as much as our ability to raise funds, is federal and state pass-throughs that come to us because, you know, through programs. And if he's elected, we're going to see another massive loss of revenue for local government through that. So right. We should be talking about these kind of things.
Yeah. Well, you just did, Jim, and you did it very well. And
thank
and,
you, sir. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for listening to us there live on WDTW in Detroit. Hollis, listening on the web here in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Hollis, got a minute before the break. What's up?
Oh, I'm a little bit worried that we're seeing the rush to invade Iraq repeated on this financial crisis. I heard Harry Reid say that he wanted to wait and see what the president and his administration come up with, and I'm scared stiff that we're going to buy another Republican pig in the poke.
Yeah, I think that there's a very good chance of it, and this is one of the things that concerns me, is that the Democrats may be afraid to drive a hard bargain for fear of having the whole thing blamed on them. And if they don't drive a hard bargain, what's going to happen is they're going to give what the Republicans are asking for. And Bernie was quite explicit about this. This is political. Ravi Batra, here you've got a, you know, world-class economist with no political, dog in the fight, saying the exact same thing, that what they're trying to do is they're trying to keep their fingers in the dike until November 4th and to help John McCain, period. And after that, they don't care what happens. You know, let it all fall apart. And I am very concerned that the Democrats are going to just go along with this. And time will tell. Time will tell. But hopefully, Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer and some of these guys will be listening carefully to people like Byron Dorgan and Russ Feingold and Bernie Sanders, who actually understand these issues, understand them with a real level of depth and brilliance. And we'll do it right, both politically right and economically right.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Chris, you have those two pieces of audio. Welcome back, 21 minutes past the hour. Okay, this may be a conspiracy theory, are we all paranoid here kind of conspiracy theory. But, you know, for example, CNN article. CNN. Question, is this why the cover-up of the West Side workers at the Galveston, Texas laboratory were said to contain dangerous biological agents, secured the pathogens Friday ahead of Hurricane Act? In other words, they're asking the question, why is it that the press is being kept out of some of these areas that were hit by the hurricane over this last weekend? This was a, here's, I just want to play a clip. This is a reporter. This is a press conference. Wayne Del Safino, I believe, is the reporter. And he's talking with Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, about why is it that we're not allowed to report on what's going on. Here's the clip.
Governor, the lack of media access and information from Bolivar and the West End is unprecedented. We've covered many storms. We were in Mississippi and Louisiana the very next day. What's the situation in Bolivar? How many fatalities are there? And why hasn't the media been allowed, because it's our job to be independent of government,
right,
have been allowed to be in Bolivar, be in West End, to show people what is going on with their homes?
Well, Wayne, I don't know where you've been, but we just got back from Galveston, and there was a huge room of media there.
Governor, for the last 3 days, and I'm not talking about Galveston. I'm talking about the Bolivar Peninsula and West End, where we have been denied access.
Right.
We have been denied permission to be there, even in helicopters, and that is unprecedented and, quite honestly, not appropriate, because it's our job to inform people. So
right.
Why can't we go to Bolivar, and why can't we go to West End? And
I think the local officials, when the local officials decide that it is appropriate for people, whether it's the media or whether it's first responders or what have you, but the fact of the matter is that's actually a local decision, Wayne, that's made by the local county judge and by the mayor of those
municipalities. They don't control the airspace, Governor, no offense.
Well,
the airspace.
Last time I checked, the state of Texas doesn't either. That's a federal responsibility.
So it's the federal government that's denying our
I don't know. You're delving into some questions and issues that, but I know one thing. I don't control federal airspace.
I know one thing, I don't control federal. So you know, he asked, why can't we go into this, into Bolivar? Why can't we go in into these places where, you know, there are reports on the web, and again, this is, you know, nobody knows because the media is not there. There are reports that there are bodies floating, that this was a disaster, that FEMA is not doing the job that it's supposed to do, that this would look bad for Bush and McCain. And so they're keeping the press out. And so the Governor Rick Perry, first starts out by saying, oh, you get all kinds of press in Galveston. And he says, yeah, we're not talking about Galveston. And then he says, well, if they're not letting you in, it must be the local officials. And he says, this has got nothing to do with the local officials. They won't let us fly our helicopters over this site. And Perry says, well, you know, I don't control the airspace. That's the feds. I sure hope that somebody in the corporate media we'll get on this story, and you may want to contact CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, even Fox News, and ask, you know, is there a media blackout? Are there bodies floating down there? I honestly don't know, but I'm there. This is one of those situations where there's so much smoke that you really start to think maybe there's a fire going on. Maybe there's a fire going on, and that would not be a good thing. At all. Pam in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Pam, welcome to the show.
Yes, I have an answer to your question about the McCain yard signs.
Right.
That's because the Obama campaign is selling their yard signs. They're $5 a piece here in Michigan.
Right.
And I was at a Democratic club meeting last night, and a guest there was the head of the campaign here in Michigan. Her name is Jenna Pilott. And I voiced my dismay over this because, especially here in Michigan, not everybody can afford it, but a lot of other people do not know where to get them. I had to stop along a street where I saw one Obama sign and knock on the door and ask the guy where he obtained his thing. He got it from the internet, but then I learned later at another Democratic meeting where the campaign was located, and I went to the headquarters and I bought the last two. We've got another shipment coming in, but I think this is not really good for the Obama campaign.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Pam, because on the one hand, by selling the yard signs, A, they're building a mailing list. They're knowing who their supporters are. B, they're raising a little bit of money. $5 is not,
that's,
you know,
right.
It's not that much. But C, you got the problem of you put the sign out, some guy steals it the next day, and you may have to go through 20, 30 signs between now and the election, and at $5 a piece, it starts to add up.
I had that happen in the Kerry campaign. I had two of my Kerry signs stolen, and I had to go back and get another one, and it stopped when I turned my lights on all night.
Yeah, or hook it up to an electric fence charger.
Yes.
Pam, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the heads up on that. 27 minutes past the hour. Anything goes Friday. We'll get back to your calls. Also, I want to share with you a new ad, a new campaign that I think is absolutely brilliant, being put together by a group associated with the Pro-Life Democrat.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Prison's gonna fill them all. Keep on building bombs, gonna drop them all. Working your fingers bare to the bone. Breaking your back, make you sell your soul. Life alone is filled with hope. Suffocating slow. The wind blows wild and I may move. But politicians lie and I am not fooled. You don't need no razor nor a three-piece suit to argue the truth.
the air on my skin and the world under my toes. Slavery stitched to the fabric of my clothes. Chaos and commotion wherever I go. Love I try to follow. Love will come set me free.
34 minutes past the hour. This is an incredible. This just made my day. Over at democraticunderground.com, his own petard posts. He says, I just got back from visiting my doctor, who told me that the patient before me, a very wealthy and very staunch Republican, was saying how critical it is for Obama to be defeated in November. And this is the doctor telling this poster that the previous patient, this Republican, was giving the doctor a speech about how Obama has to be defeated. As the reasons for his believing this, he regurgitated every freeze-dried Republican talking point that's already been debunked 100 times or more, and at the end of his ignorant diatribe, he leaned closer to the doctor and stage whispered, "There's no way we can let that guy sleep in the Lincoln bedroom." My doctor said that when he left the examining room, he went directly to his desk and, for the first time in his life, made a political contribution, writing out a check for $1,000 to Barack Obama. I love it. I love it. And along those lines, not entirely along those lines, but this is former Congressman Tony Hall is working with a group called Matthew25.org. Matthew 25, of course, is the chapter the verse in the book of Matthew in the New Testament where the disciples come to Jesus and they say, "How do we get into heaven?" And he says, when I'm judging in the end, at the very end, he says, "I will bring with me into heaven the people who fed me when I was hungry, who gave me water when I was thirsty, who visited me when I was in prison, who clothed me when I was naked, who sheltered me when I was homeless," you know, et cetera. He goes through this list. And the disciples are freaked out because they never saw him in any of those conditions. You know, and so they said to him, "We're screwed because, we've never seen you hungry. We've never seen you thirsty. We've never seen you in prison. So we're not going to get into heaven." And he says, "As you have done to the least of these, your brethren, you've done to me." Right. So this is that's Matthew 25. And here, this is a spot that has been put together by this group, Matthew25.org. And it's absolutely brilliant. Former Congressman Tony Hall.
"Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you?" they asked. Jesus said, "Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, you have done it to me."
I'm former Congressman Tony Hall from Dayton, a pro-life Democrat, and as I look around Ohio, I see lots of families hurting. We have lost thousands of jobs, and folks are struggling with bills this month. Forget about next month. We need a president who sees those who are hurting and cares for the least of these. This is why I am supporting Barack Obama. As a child, Barack knew hard times too. He had to rely on food stamps to get by. And as a Christian, Barack believes God calls us to care for those in need. He has spent his life doing just that. As president, Barack Obama will work to feed the hungry, create good jobs, cover health care, and cut taxes for those who need it most. Please join me in supporting Barack Obama for president.
Paid for by the Matthew 25 Network, Matthew25.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
And then, isn't that amazing? By the way, there's, 20 minutes left. For our listeners in San Francisco, live here on Green 960, to go to green960.com and sign up if you want to hang out with Norman Solomon and me tonight, Broadway Studios, 435 Broadway Street in San Francisco. We've got a pretty good sized venue there. It should be a great time. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And it seems that, Peg in Covington, Pennsylvania, you had a follow-up on the Obama yard sign.
Yes. I wanted to let that lady know, and anybody else who's disgruntled about that, as far as I know, with my activity with the local Obama office, we pay our own way. We must purchase these yard signs, and also
we being
we're
the local,
paying
the local
rent on the office that we run, and that's a way of deferring the cost. So I would prefer them not to be torqued at the local volunteers who are not paid and are plowing their money in as fast as they can plow it in.
And their time.
Pardon me?
And their time.
Absolutely, and their time.
Yeah. So, the bottom line is these things do cost money, and somebody has to pay for them, and I think it's great that they're being used this way. On the other hand, the McCain campaign, you know, they just get a big corporation or some fat cat, some millionaire, some billionaire, buy a whole pile of signs and stick them all in front of people's houses. And there is a certain political risk to having the signs be at a premium. On the other hand, there may be an advantage. It may be that people will care for them more carefully. They will be more likely to hook them up to an electric fence charger, you know, to do something to prevent them from getting stolen.
You know, I don't want to advocate that.
Well, of course not.
But
nobody ever would.
I just thought people in general should know that at least in Pennsylvania, we get some printed materials that the campaign will gleefully hand out.
There you go.
And one of the reasons during the primary that there was a holdup on even getting signs that we were willing to pay for was the fact that Obama would not have them done if they were not done in a union shop.
Nice.
So in rural Pennsylvania, you try to find a rural shop.
Right.
You know,
shop,
so we couldn't even have them done our own selves.
Wow.
So it'd be a little kinder toward these people who are working their tuchuses off.
You got it, Peg.
Okay.
You got it. And thanks so much for working your tuchus off. I mean, we all really appreciate the work that the volunteers are doing. And it is so important. It's not enough to just vote this year. Get down to your local Democratic office and like Peg has, say, here, I'm here. Let me, you know, an hour a week, an hour a day a week, whatever you can give, whatever you can do, do it. Peg, thanks so much.
Certainly.
For being part of the solution. David in Portland, Oregon. Hey, David.
Hello?
You are on the air, sir.
I just got a comment about anybody who's looking for a bright side to this debacle in the stock market.
Right.
That any politician that comes along and dares suggest we put our Social Security in the stock market should be laughed out of town.
Yeah. And let's keep in mind that was what George W. Bush campaigned on in 1977 when he was unsuccessful in his campaign for, you know, running for House of Representatives in Texas. And that's something that has been part of John McCain's portfolio forever. The Republicans have been campaigning on the privatization of Social Security literally since its creation in the 1930s, in 1936. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And in fact, I'm surprised, frankly, and thank you, David, for bringing it up, and for listening there on KPOJ, I'm frankly surprised that more people are not pointing out that, boy, it's a good thing we didn't privatize Social Security. Where would we be right now? I mean, I'm just astounded. Harvey in Berkeley. Hey, Harvey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. As far as I'm concerned, McCain's chances are paling.
Well done. Well said. That was your comment.
Well, no, I believe that it was George Bush's and the Republicans' party job to run up the deficit by creating wars, borrow and not tax, because
yes.
Of Clinton, he was paying off the deficit, and to those who finance the deficit, this was a national disaster. So it was George Bush's job to run up the deficit as much as he can, and I think that
he did an excellent job. And there's two reasons for that, Harvey. One reason is, as you point out, that there are people who make a profit off the deficit.
That's right.
Those are the people who buy the Treasury bills. But increasingly that's not even the United States. It's China and things. I'd say the other reason, and this is the other one that I'm astounded we're not hearing more about in the media, is you'll recall that famous saying by Grover Norquist back in 2002, and I believe May of 2002 with Mara Liasson on All Things Considered, where he said, you know, we don't want to destroy the American government. We simply want to shrink it down to the size where we can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. And how do they do that? They do that by running it into such deep and profound debt that the only way it can function is to start disintegrating itself, to start shedding pieces of itself, to start privatizing itself. And that's what they've been doing, and they've been doing it quite successfully. And in the process, not only are they destroying the government, but they're destroying our nation. And that's the horror of the whole thing. Harvey, thanks a lot for the call. Peter in Blaine, Washington. Hey, Peter, got a minute before the break here. What's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just wanted to point out that it appears that Sarah Palin is incapable of telling the truth, even in a tiny matter that it wouldn't matter if it was true. The other night I saw her before a group of people saying, I look out my front window and I see Russia.
Right.
Well, you know, unless she lives where nobody lives,
right,
she can't look out her window and see Russia. but this qualifies her to be vice president and or president.
I think that this is a sign of hubris, Peter. I think that, you know, of just an inflated vanity or pride, out of control, that she just thinks she can do no wrong. And I mean, you know, she keeps repeating this lie that she was opposed to the Bridge to Nowhere over and over and over again. They're up to like 56 times now, I think, that she said this lie. And CBS has called her out on it, NBC, everybody's called her out on it. She keeps saying it. And I think it's a combination of just incredible arrogance and a belief that Goebbels' big lie theory is actually true all the time. You know, and as Abe Lincoln said, you can fool some of the people some of the time, all the people some of the time, some of the people all the time, but not all the people all the time. It doesn't work.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to our executive producer Sean Taylor, to Chris Rosen, Lauren Kirshner, Marcus Hillman at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, to John Scott and the great folks here at Green 960 in San Francisco who've given us studio space the last couple days, and the folks at Radio La Union in Lima, Peru, who gave us a studio on Monday, and the folks at Broadway Studios, where I'll be tonight in San Francisco at 7 o'clock along with Norman Solomon. Thank you, and to you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. I got to get a quick call in here. Dan has been on hold for a long, long time. Dan, listening at KYNS in Shell Beach, California. And then we've got to pick up Victoria Jones with the news. What's up, Dan?
Hey, Tom, it's Dan, and I've got two questions based on one of your core issues, which I believe is the root cause of our economic mess and a lot of other problems. But if, due to the false entry in the Supreme Court records, corporations have the same rights as persons, then you can create a person by creating a corporation. So you'll always have more persons in the country than people, and that is just simply crazy. And I've got a quick follow-up to that.
Mm-hmm.
If money equals free speech and corporations are driven by greed and have no responsibility for benefiting the citizens of this country, they will always control more money than people, and therefore they will always have control of our country.
Yeah, and this is the problem. Dan, well said. This is the problem that Teddy Roosevelt identified. It's why he became the trust buster. It's why in 1907 they passed a law making it a federal felony for corporations to give money to political campaigns and candidates, although there have been a million exceptions to that since then. It's why the Sherman Act was passed in 1881. And it's why we need massive campaign reform in the United States and lobbying reform. I mean, when Reagan came into office, there were fewer than 300 lobbyists in Washington, D.C. Today, there's more than 30,000. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us. What's happening in Washington today, Victoria?
Well, today the president spoke, flanked by Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, and SEC Chairman Chris Cox. He spoke. He said that it's a pivotal moment for America's economy and said that we must act now to protect our nation's economic health from serious risk. Went on to talk a little bit about exactly what it is that we're going to be doing. Now, he spoke yesterday also about the economy, but he spoke for 2 minutes and was widely derided for his words and the manner in which he spoke them yesterday.
Yeah, Chris Matthews kept referring to it as his cuckoo clock speech.
And even Donald took after him for his speech yesterday. Today he was stronger, more forceful.
Therefore, things are wonderful.
Well, I don't know that I go that far, but he certainly was stronger and more forceful. We'll see whether the markets responded to what he had to say.
Yeah. Any specifics on what they're doing? I mean, I have read that they're talking about selling some of our gold reserves to pay for this, further impoverishing the United States. that they're talking about borrowing hundreds of billions, perhaps as much as $1 trillion, adding it to the national debt, borrowing it from our children and grandchildren, and further impoverishing the United States to bail out these big banking corporations and investment corporations and the rich folks invested in the hedge funds. Most hedge funds you can't even get into with less than $250,000.
They are doing things like that. Specifics, there weren't many specifics. The specifics will come from Treasury and the Fed, which will give its plan to Capitol Hill sometime today, probably, and then they will come up with whatever they're going to come up with in the way of legislation. So we don't know the specifics yet. You know, the devil is definitely going to be in the details. There was something interesting also in the president's address this morning that both the AP reporter and I jumped on, where he said, this is no time for partisanship. We must join to move urgently needed legislation as quickly as possible without adding controversial provisions that could delay action. And I asked Dana Perino, what specifically was he talking about when he said that?
Mm-hmm.
And she flat out refused to answer me.
Yeah, well, what he was saying is, it's my way or the highway, Charlie, and if the Democrats want to say, okay, you want to bail out the people who are invested in hedge funds, and again, if you want to buy into a hedge fund, most hedge funds require you to have at least $1 million in liquid assets and a minimum purchase of $250,000. So if you want to bail out all these hedge funds and all these other guys, let's raise the taxes to pay for the bailout, for example, if the Democrats were to say that. Bush is not going to go along with that, for example.
That could well be one of the examples.
Yeah.
Now, the Democrats are also going to be asking, and this is a question that came up during the briefing, Democrats are quite likely going to be saying, what about individual homeowners? What are you going to do for them?
Right. Yeah, and that's another one. It's in addition to bailing out the banks, let's bail out some of the folks who are losing their homes. So, yeah.
And at the moment, there doesn't seem to be any provision for those people.
Yeah. Yeah. How are the Democrats playing this, by the way, Victoria Jones?
Well, the Democrats are playing that they're trying to look very serious about it. At the same time, Speaker Nancy Pelosi said yesterday that they're going to hold a series of hearings in September and October. House Financial Services Committee Chairman Barney Frank and House Oversight Committee Chairman Pitbull Henry Waxman are going to be holding hearings during the recess starting next week. Going into this, they're going to be calling Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke, as well as senior executives from Lehman and AIG, to appear before committees to answer questions as to what went wrong.
Yeah. Well, it seems like a good idea. It seems like a really good idea. At the same time, things are unraveling so rapidly that we really need to have a crash course in economics for average Americans to get it that the really simple way for the Democrats to say it is, what you are seeing today is the results of 30 years of Reaganomics. Period. It's real simple. We saw the same thing in the 20s after three Republican administrations did the same thing Reagan did. Anyhow, Victoria Jones, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks a lot, Victoria, for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Great having you with us. And it's going to be an interesting day tomorrow. Monday. This is the weekend, isn't it? Because I was in Peru and flying back on Tuesday, it seemed all week, 2 days off. Anyhow, we'll be back on Monday with the program. Don't forget, my friends, get out there, get active. Democracy isn't a spectator sport. It depends on you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.